All right, this is Dave Nemo. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 659. On the road. Going to be on the road for many hours. So, I'm sitting here, enjoying it, I suppose. Anyway. I had something come to me. This one is about a new book. Any of you who've listened to my recordings for very long at all, especially the older ones, the quasi-indefatigable Zenon stuff, everything before 538, if you've ever listened to those, they're not terribly accessible. In fact, I think right now they're not accessible at all. They're not even currently on the Gopher space. Yikes! I need to alter that a bit. Ugh. Anyway. I could do that with different partitions. What a marvelous idea. Wait a minute. I was just thinking about how I could solve my Gopher space / web space problem, and I think I've stumbled on a way to do it without having to reconnoiter everything. You know, make them into separate partitions, or virtual partitions perhaps, and, you know, have different ways of accessing them. That's simple enough. Anyway, so any of you know that I've been working on a book that has been called God Said. I've changed the name to Navigium, and it's a huge work. I've been working on it for years and years and years, since I was like 15 years old. I've done some writing since then, but by and large, it's been kind of poking at Navigium on and off for a little while. Well, for forever. And it came to me not too long ago, maybe about a week ago, that I needed to do something else. Navigium has been pulling hard towards Zenith. I was starting to introduce elements of Zenith. Some of the characters were Zenith characters. And if you don't have kind of a grip on what being Zenith is, if you haven't listened to the earlier podcast, if you haven't listened to the archives, you might not know what that is. The archives are totally free. You can access them at autistic.quix.us. And you'll see that besides this regular, you know, the current episode feed, there's also two other feeds that are just the archives, and you can get a feed of those. Those feeds don't change, but you can certainly download them however your favorite way to download things is. I just made it convenient by just making them just podcasts that came to an end. But what Zenith is basically is obsession. Now, you look at it, it's kind of a geeky, nerdy, autistic-y, Asperger-ish thing. And so, you know, if you have any of those attributes, you find yourself saying, oh, hey, I sound kind of Zenith, too. It's because Zenith is drawn from those things. It was just, I like to think of it as a different take on that kind of a person, trying to redefine that kind of a person into something positive, instead of calling it a disability and saying you've got problems. Because in our culture, we view obsessiveness as being a bad thing. Oh, it's not good to be obsessive. we need people to be very shallow and superficial. You know, that works for a lot of different groups. Government especially likes shallow, superficial people because they don't tend to get really anal about anything. And they don't tend to rise up and kill those in power. You want your people to be shallow and superficial and kind of have lightly touched a lot of things so that they don't care. That's very, very useful, not just for government, but for a lot of groups. Marketers love that too. Shallow, superficial people are very easily swayed by marketing campaigns, and they tend to buy things. The whole interest in iPods, and I find the whole iPod craze, which may be kind of flattening out, or the iPhone phase, craze, to be really kind of silly. I mean, these aren't innovations. The iPod, there were tons of MP3 players before the iPod. They, you know, only weird, geeky type of people actually had them. And then all of a sudden the iPod came and it became this huge mass consumer, every butthead on the universe had one type of thing. Very expensive, but very, very svelte, I guess, you know, very cool. You know, and that's what also happened to the iPhone. There's been cell phones for years and years and years, but all of a sudden Apple came out with the iPhone, and it just blew everything else away. Everybody's going, why? What did it really have that was really different? And in some ways, it was somewhat inferior to the other things that were out there. But it was almost that whole thing about being a mass marketing thing. That stuff, all those things only work if people are shallow and somewhat superficial. I'm not going to get onto this until it's really cool to get into it. You know, and I guess it takes Steve Jobs and Apple to make things cool enough that it becomes this huge thing that sells millions and millions and millions of units. You know, that within 1 month of it being out, you know, it's this amazing thing. You know, we sold 2 million units in the first week, and you're going, this is nuts. This isn't even new. This is basically a repackaging of something you already had. But oh no, for most people, this is brand new. Oh wow, look at what I can do with this. It's like, hello, you've been able to do this for 10 years. You just didn't notice. I mean, on the MP3 front, the market was already mature enough that there was, you know, cheap Chinese knockoffs that had some pretty dang good features. That's what I usually use in an MP3 player. My work gave me iPods, which I thought was kind of ditzy of them. It just shows how much the IT department is not very technically minded. It tends to chase trends, which is scary enough. Anyway, my first MP3 player was a really cheap one. Bought it for like $15. And it could record, which is something that an iPod doesn't do unless you get attachments. And I don't think the current iPod can really do much recording. Because they said, you know, people really don't want to do that. They just want to have their music and they want to jam. You know? It's now become the thing. You know, everybody has a record player. Everybody has an iPod. You know, and they kind of follow it dumbly because people are somewhat shallow and, what was the other word I used? Oh no, superficial, thank you. And we're trained to be that way. So that's why obsession, I'm trying to come back around. That's why obsession is viewed as being a bad thing. It's viewed as being a bad thing by a lot of people. You know, you need a few obsessive people that really get into something. Of course, everybody thinks they're weird because those are the kind of people that created the technology that went into the iPod. But you only need two or three of those people, You need two or three of those people, and then you need 5 million people who mindlessly go out and buy it. You know? So that's what our schools, that's what our society tries to produce. You know, you need a mass of mindless consumers. You don't need a bunch of people who are obsessive. So we make it into a sickness. And the whole point of Zenith is, don't make it into a sickness. This is a great thing. I don't know if we want a whole lot of obsessive people, but honestly, I don't think we have a lot of obsessive people. I don't think it's something that you can learn. It's almost something that has to be inborn. It's a wiring thing. And that's what brings it back to the whole realm of autism. You know, is people say, well, we'd really like these guys to behave like everybody else. Our goal is really to make as many mindless consumers as we can, and every once in a while, one of these weird engineering technical types will bubble up, and he gets a good job, and we throw a lot of money at him, or we try not to anymore, you know, because we want to keep the cost of research and development down, too, you know. But what I'm noticing is, I think we're seeing a lot more of these people bubbling up. I think God is interceding where government and school and the market really don't want to see it. So, you know, let's paint this as a sickness. And then when there's more of them coming up, you go, let's paint it as a crisis. You know, we need to convince. And the funny thing is where this is going. We need to convince parents that having one of these people is just such a chore and so horrible that we'll find a test that when they're in amniocentesis, I guess that's what the test is called. It's one of the tests. That when they're in the womb, we can check to see if they have this proclivity for being autistic or being obsessed so that we can wipe them out, you know, so that you can terminate them before they're even born. I think that in some strange sense, that's one of the bigger reasons why evil, I call evil the devil, but you can call evil something else. If you want to be secular about it, feel free. There are forces of evil. I think that's why evil wants to make sure that euthanasia and abortion and stuff like that is a right. And they want the quote-unquote disabled, they want the euthanizing of the disabled to be first acceptable, then to be the preferred method of handling it. Well, we don't want those poor kids to suffer. Right now in the autistic community, it's split down two lines. One is what I call the Kirby's, which are people who are straining horribly, you know, parents who are straining horribly for a cure to break. They almost perceive their child as in this shell, trying desperately to get out of this shell of autism that is wrapped around their reality. And if we can break a chink open, all of a sudden you'll see the wonderful, beautiful, normal person inside just trying to break out of the shell. Now, then you see what I call the culturists, which are the people who are saying, hey, there's something to be praised here in being autistic. You know, there's some things that are good about that. Now, there's some people that ride both lines. I think Temple Grandin is an interesting dichotomy in that she kind of runs both lines. She likes to let people know how different by nature autistic people are. She's autistic too. But she's also for heavy remediation. She's also big on trying to make them fit in with society, which I think is somewhat, you know, I'm not really sure. To a degree, as a parent of people on the spectrum, I think, that this is truly you know, I want them to be able to at least function in society, but I, you know, but I don't want to take away the essence of what they are. Now, Temple says you can't take it away, I think. At least I think that's what I take away from her. And I think basically she's right. You aren't going to be able to change what they are. What you can change is how successful they are in society. There's a whole bunch of culturalists, and I guess this is kind of a subgroup of them, who want to change society so that they'll just accept autistic people as they are. And I don't think that's going to happen. It's not, you know, let's be honest. We're still a minority in this world. Might change someday in the future. I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, they want the larger culture to be more accepting of autism. And then there's, I don't know if it's really a subgroup particularly of the culturists, but that kind of, you know, but then there are people who say, no, we're just going to have to stay with this culture, we're just going to have to do our best to try, we'll avoid cocktail parties for Pete's sakes, but otherwise we want to find places to be, ways to interface, we want to make sure we keep our ends with academia, which I think they always will. You know, even before people started to self-identify as Asperger's or as being this kind of a person, kind of a spectrum person, you know, a lot of those people found safe haven in academia. Of course, now academia is starting to change into this competitive, horrible place that's driving these people away, driving our kind of people away. And that's sad. You know, where is our next safe haven going to be? I've often thought about how we can make that sort of a safe haven. Anyway, so that was a big, huge tangent. We had a tangent, and then we went back to the original tangent, but up, out, and out, and out, and then back in. And now I'm going to try to pull it right back into the thing about me trying to do another book. Now this book, I intend on doing a Zenith-ish book. The protagonist, is that the main character? The antagonist is your enemy, so the protagonist must be your basic good guy. Your good guy. The good guy is going to be pretty stock autistic, and I decided that we're going to call him autistic, we're not going to call him Zenith, because we want this to touch a nerve. I don't think I've ever seen a well-written book, and I want them to know, you know, I might end up going out and getting myself diagnosed once I think it's going to profit me, and I think it will. If I want to get diagnosed as Asperger's or whatever, being on the spectrum, you know, all you have to do is get a psychologist that's willing to go that way, because you go, I'm sorry, I intend on profiting off of this. Sounds sick, I know. It almost sounds like politics, doesn't it? But to be honest, everything ends up being a little political. Write this book. It'd be great if I was diagnosed and they could say, oh, this is the first really successful book written by an autistic person, which I think would be a lie. I said, I'm sure many books have been written by autistic people. By golly, papers have been written, everything. It's not that autistic people can't be successful writers. I don't know if this would probably be the first self-identified, hopefully very successful, autistic book, and has as its subject, as its protagonist, an autistic character that goes and does something that's uniquely suited for autistic people to be involved in. You know, I kind of want to make it into something where this is something that regular people couldn't solve, couldn't take care of, and you want an autistic, you know, and an autistic person is the only one you can do. I'm not clear on what that is. If you have any suggestions of what you think would be a wonderful thing, I've thought about cyber terrorism, I've thought of things like that, something where some normal straight person would give this person an award and clap their hands. If it was the President of the United States, if it was some king or some, you know, some important normal person would give this person a medal And it was because they had done something amazing that normal people have problems with. And I need to kind of whittle that down. It has to be something. I would love for it to be something that has to do with being obsessive about it. Something that most people would just go, oh, I don't see the danger of it, let it go. And this guy, being obsessive, stays on it like a dog. You know, got it, you know, you're in your bulldog's grip, and you don't let it go until you finally uncover some sinister plot, and it's taken care of, mostly because this person just would not give up their tenacious thing of saying, I'm going to keep an eye on these people. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, I really don't want him to have a weird job that's kind of out of the ordinary. I wouldn't mind him being kind of an analyst for the CIA or something along those. I'm not sure I really want them in the spy industry, particularly. I think in subsequent books, because, you know, it would be fun for this to become a series, too. You know, that he would get a job in the bowels of an agency, and he would become some fantastic specialist. I am heartened by things like the TV series Monk, which I have never really watched. I think I watched one episode it just happened to come on when I was overnighting somewhere in some motel room, and I got a chance to watch it. And the fact that, you know, that he has a special talent, and people kind of get past the fact that he's very compulsive. You know, he's a very compulsive person. I think he's really a model for, hey, let's show off our talents. I think Monk is a wonderful thing, and I think we need a book that just kind of pins the name autistic to it. You know, autistic isn't just, you know, people who have such horrible disabilities that they can't do anything except be this thing that you have to feed and eat and go out and service. You know, that goes into some kind of a weird group home. We may have this guy living in a group home. I don't think so. I think I'm going to certainly have him be in a group of autistics. I think he'll be in an autistic support group. And, you know, there may be a couple of, not that far, but, you know, people who really have problems interfacing with the world, have problems communicating with their mouths the way normal people demand that you communicate. You know, but that he will be somebody who does better in society. Not fantastic, but does better. Want him to be autistic. Want him to have the traits. You know, want to have his tics and his obsessions and the things that he really cares about and gets into. Maybe those number stations on the radio. Now, those of you who don't know about this, you know, it's kind of a novel. The amateur radio people sometimes listen to these things. Other people do. It's kind of a conspiracy theory thing. You know, there's places where, and I've listened to the Spanish ones. I can get the Spanish ones on my little world radio that I've got. They say uno, uno, dos, siete, cinco, cinco, cero. You know, and it just goes through this thing. And it's a code. It's stuff going out to somebody doing some secret, who knows. Or maybe it's just people just jerking our chains. And that this guy can just be into that. It can be one of his weird things. And maybe he breaks the code and finds out that there really is a conspiracy, maybe to murder somebody or to do something else. And he gets that. And then the CIA wants to pull him in because he's this amazing thing. He can break code. They kind of coalesce in his head. We see autistic people that can do that. So I think it might go that way. So I'm starting a new book. It's going to be doing this. Now, I'm glad that this podcast really is very well listened to. Because, you know, I guess I'm revealing my secrets a little bit, and I don't want other people to kind of jump on it before I can. I've been told I'm a pretty good writer. You know? And it'll have a whole lot to do about the culture of autism and about the tics and the stuff like that. And about how autistic people really want to be noticed. I don't even know if it's very noticed, but to be just to be accepted in the larger world and not be treated like some kind of, you know, blob that we need to, you know, that gets acted upon instead of acting themselves. We all really want that. Anyway, so this is Jay Numero working on that new book. I like that idea, the whole numbers thing. The whole numbers thing. This is definitely something that's quite esoteric. But it could have cyber terrorism or eco terrorism sort of tentacles in there too. And you know, this guy could have an antagonist who is trying to outsmart him all the time. Is doing things like that, kind of the evil. I really don't know if I want to make that person autistic too, maybe. You know, that works for an evil thing. Maybe at some point that he can be turned to the good side and stop offering his services and his ability to, you know, selling it for evil. Anyway, I like it. I like where this is going. I'm going to have to keep my thoughts on this and keep plowing away on it. This is Jay Numero. You're listening to Life Autistic. An episode on the new book. This is episode number 659. And if you want to contact me, please do. The email address is autism@quix.us. You know, I'm not going to put up the telephone number anymore, because after I publish this book, I'm going to get plenty of speaking gigs anyway, and things like that, and lecture series. You know, people trying to talk about, well, what is the amazing part about autism? You know, whatever. You know, I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. This is Jay Numero, so I'm not going to worry about that. autism@quix.us. Any comments, anything, just to say, Jay, I'm listening. Thanks a lot for doing it. Or, Jay, I listen and I hate your guts and I wish you would just shut up. Whatever. Am I going to say the Life Autistic 5 more times before I get off of here? I hope not. Have a great day!